Coming up on KUCB News, Governor Bill Walker wants this year's Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod fishery labeled a federal disaster. And the first Iditarod musher has arrived in White Mountain. Stay tuned.
Local news is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Tuesday, March 13th, 2018. 7 years ago this week, a magnitude 9.1 earthquake struck off the coast of Japan, triggering a tsunami with waves up to 30 feet high. The event ravaged communities, and its after effects have been felt across the Pacific. Now, scientists estimate that following the tsunami, there was more than 10 times as much debris washing ashore in North America than what was measured before. People don't enjoy seeing garbage in their outdoor spaces. Dr. Catherine Murray says that's especially true in places like Alaska that can end up with other countries' trash.
Places like Alaska, you're getting debris from places far away, so there's not much you can do about it on a local scale. So you can't say to your own community, let's stop using plastic bags and then we'll stop seeing garbage on the beach. And in those cases, it's not often true because it's coming from very far away.
Following the Great Japan Tsunami in 2011, researchers noted that there seemed to be more marine debris than usual. Over 4 years of monitoring, the team recorded that nearly 100,000 items washed ashore from Alaska to Oregon. In Washington and Oregon, it was easier to respond to reports of debris, but it was a challenge to figure out how much debris there was in more remote and pristine places like Alaska or British Columbia. Aesthetics isn't the only reason to be worried about the debris. It can impact wildlife and human health. And now Murray says they think sea creatures from Japan have managed to cross the ocean with the trash.
Because they had rafted such a long way away and they took a very slow journey across the ocean, a lot of the species ended up in quite good condition. Some of them were reproductive when they landed. Some of them were growing at sea.
Species have always had the ability to raft, but it was on natural items like wood or pumice stones.
But now we enter plastic into it, which doesn't degrade indefinitely. So it is floating around and can allow species to make these long, long journeys, whereas before, their raft would have broken down into pieces and left them in the middle of the ocean.
Increasing storm intensity may mean natural disasters like tsunamis will be bigger and have greater impacts. Murray is worried that will mean more plastic and maybe even more hitchhikers will be able to cross oceans. The Unalaska City Council meets tonight. At their regular session, councilors are expected to certify the results of last week's recall election, which failed to oust Mayor Frank Kelty. They're also scheduled to hear a funding request from Unalaska's Sea Grant Office, as well as a presentation on the state's new study of domestic violence in the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands. The City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott signed a letter last week asking the federal government to declare the 2018 Pacific cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska a disaster. If the fishery is declared a federal disaster, it's eligible for relief funds, although where those would go is unclear at this point in the process. The declaration request follows a decline in stock and a deep cut to the 2018 Pacific cod quota in the Gulf. Barbara Blake, senior advisor to the governor and lieutenant governor, says the resulting drop in revenue makes the fishery eligible for a disaster declaration.
We do know that this year the numbers, based on the closures that have already been enacted, that the closures are going to equate our catch of Pacific cod to the 80% threshold, which is a requirement for a disaster declaration at the federal level.
According to the letter, the value of the 2018 Pacific cod harvest is looking at a more than 80% drop in revenue from the five-year average. Blake says that 80% threshold makes it eligible for a disaster declaration. And that letter will go to the Secretary of Commerce. And if the federal government declares it a disaster, it will work with the state to make an appropriate request.
How we've seen this come about in the past is that that request goes in along with other natural disasters, and that's usually how we end up getting the appropriations for that, is that they roll it into natural disasters like hurricane relief and things of that nature.
That's also how the fishery disaster for the 2016 Gulf of Alaska pink salmon season won funding this year. It's unclear if the timeline for this declaration will be comparable. An upset on a notoriously fickle part of the Iditarod Trail switched the order among top mushers yesterday. As Nicholas Petit was heading north along the Bering Sea coast between Shaktulik and Koyuk, he strayed from the trail, heading east towards shore, then doubling back. The area was getting hit with strong winds and a ground storm that severely reduced visibility. Yor Olsom passed Petit and reached the Koyuk checkpoint first, nudging Olsom into a lead many thought that was locked in by Petit. Olsom was still first this morning, arriving in White Mountain very well positioned to win this race. Whether Olsom or Petit wins, it would be either man's first Iditarod championship. And currently, the top of the Iditarod leaderboard is filled with young mushers. Mitch Seavey, currently in third place, is the only former champion among the top 20 teams. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, many esteemed members of mushing's old guard are content to watch a new generation inherit the mantle.
Usually along the trail, Jeff King has a giant tub of animal crackers. But right now in Unalakleet, surrounded by boxes of snacks, he is liberally enjoying a bag of candy.
Meaning a couple of peanut butter cups by Reese's before I go up and have a bite in the community center.
King has won the Iditarod four times, among innumerable other distinctions in a sport he's helped define for decades. But his drive to win is diminished.
My motto has been, I'm going to get there as fast as I can without rushing. And you know, I just need sleep now. I didn't used to need, or at least I'm not willing to go without to keep up with these yahoos. I'm not physically up to it.
As he watches younger mushers stress over minutes lost in their scramble to win, King doesn't feel envy. Instead, it's causing him to re-examine a notorious reputation for competitiveness that came at the expense of a lot else.
There's even part of me on the Yukon watching these guys just go, why? Why are you, and why did I used to feel so compelled to get my dogs to know them faster than your dogs? Who really gives a rip?
Instead, he's approaching the race more philosophically and compares racing his dog team 1,000 miles to his mother growing heirloom tomatoes.
You know, you don't rush it. You plan it, you nurture it, you care for it, and then you monitor the fruit. In this case, the fruit is the energy and the athleticism of the dogs. But you don't pick the fruit until it's ready.
What King means is that he isn't going to push his dogs or himself for the sake of a race position. And perhaps this sounds familiar. Last year, King sang a similar tune when, early in the race, he was solidly in the middle of the pack, yet sprinted down the coast and seized 11th place. Though he's kept a comfortable pace this year, he's looking forward to speeding down the next few hundred miles. But he insists it has nothing to do with winning. It's just fun to do when you've got a gang line full of ripe tomatoes. A single spot ahead of King is one of his main competitive rivals, Martin Boozer, himself a four-time champion as well. He's just finished a baggie of muktuk, given to him as a gift, and is on his way inside for a nap. Boozer chuckles, describing his slog over the portage into Unalakleet.
It wasn't any faster than the Yukon. Everything seems like going in slow motion this year.
Boozer is upbeat, but there are notes of melancholy. He's had a little bit of fun this race, but after years of jockeying for first place, he says it's frustrating to have a good team, solid strategy, and familiar routines, yet still be just barely in the top 30.
It's just part of the game, you know? It's just one of the trials and tribulations we have to overcome.
Boozer and King haven't said anything about not running future Iditarods, but that isn't the case for Didi Jonro. one of Mushing's most vibrant celebrities. She announced a while back that she'd be retiring from competition, then scratched early in this year's race.
My personal health had gotten to the point where dog care could possibly be compromised, and that's not who I am, that's not who I want to be, and quite frankly, I think I could have been a burden.
Jonro flew to Unalakleet to stay with friends, greet peers at the checkpoint, and start enjoying the race from a new vantage point.
I thought it could possibly be kind of sad, wish I was on a team. It is not. It feels good on this end.
Jonro says she'd like to spend the next few Iditarods as a volunteer at the checkpoint in Unalakleet. On the Iditarod Trail in Unalakleet, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.